Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Who? And welcome and good morning. I'm Harry Miller.
And I'm Debbie Verney.
Hi, Debbie.
Hey, Harry. How are you?
Good, good. Debbie and I are two of the attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. We are conveniently located over here at Corporate Woods, just off of I-90 and Albany Shaker Road. We also have offices in Saratoga Springs and Kingston, New York. And this week we just signed a lease to open a new office in Clifton Park.
Yeah, so we're going to be in Clifton Park.
We will be opening our Clifton Park office sometime in January.
Yeah, we'll announce that. I had clients in yesterday that said, not for nothing, but we're not driving to Albany anymore once you open Clifton Park. And I said, okay, that's fine.
Well, it's convenient for a lot of people, not just people in Saratoga County. I had some sinus surgery a couple of weeks ago, and my sinus doctor is located on Hackett Boulevard, you know, behind where the old Child's Hospital used to be. They also have an office in Clifton Park, and frankly, from our office, it's easier for me to go to Clifton Park than drive through downtown Albany.
That's
with
true.
All the traffic and everything. So, you know, it'll be convenient for a lot of people. So, there you go. We practice estate planning, elder law, Medicaid asset protection planning. We administer estates after people have passed away. We do advanced directives like powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, living wills. Help people fill out their beneficiary designations on their various assets that don't pass under their will. And we're here each Saturday morning, if you're a regular listener, at Magic 590. And we will love to talk to you, answer your questions, wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and all those things this morning. So you can reach Debbie and I for the next hour here in the studio. The number is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. 5900. If you're calling outside the local area, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. So, did you hear Ben say that today's the first day of winter?
I knew that. Unfortunately, it's felt like the first day of winter for like the last month.
I was going to say, we never really did have fall. Just a little bit. You can't really remember.
It got cold, and the last 2 days was definitely
brutal.
Today, it's a little milder today.
I know. No, definitely. Jeez. Not a winter person.
Me either.
So I wanted to talk about one of my clients. I told her I was going to talk about her today. So she decided to take the entire family to Europe. Right?
Wow.
Right? So.
Can she want to adopt me? Or you?
I asked her. She said no. Okay. Anyway, come to find out, it's funny that you use the word adoption.
Oh.
Because she was adopted. Right?
Oh, cool.
So that's why she came in to change her documents before she left. Because if you think about it, right, she's taken her entire family. So she passes away. Does she have a spouse? No.
No spouse.
Does she have children?
No.
No, because they'd go down in the plane, right? Assuming they're all going together, right? Parents are gone.
Well, does she have brothers and sisters or?
No.
No.
Nothing.
So who's her family?
Her kids, but they're with her on the trip.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Oh, so, okay. Got it.
All right. So she came in and did her documents because if she and her family all passed away on this trip, her money would have gone where?
Well, she has no relative. It would escheat back to the state of
New
York.
To New York State, right?
It's a rare situation because we would go out to other, but if there are no relatives out a couple of degrees, that's a rare instance in which, well, we wouldn't want that to happen.
No, so she came in and she changed her docs before she left and made it so that everything went to friends and neighbors and stuff like that.
Right. And or charities. You could leave it to.
Yeah. And know. She came back in this week because we did the documents all at one time. We just didn't date them. So she came back in this week to sign the ones to put it back the way it was before she went on her trip.
Oh, okay.
But it was kind of interesting because she's the one that thought about it. She's the one that called me and said, I need to change my documents. And I'm like, why? She said, because I'm taking the family
everyone,
to Europe.
Every one of her distributees was on the trip with her, right?
Exactly.
Interesting. Well, it just ties into this article I was looking at because the point of this is, among other things, not only to have an estate plan, but a lot of single people don't think they need to bother with an estate plan. And do you know how many people in this country are single? I was shocked. It says right here, and this is out of Elle Law, there are 110 million people in this country who are unmarried over the age of 18. That's a third of the nation. There's about 320 million. How many people are in this country, Ben? About 325?
A little over 300, yeah.
Yeah. That's about a third of the country.
And you think we could get these kids together?
Are unmarried. Now listen, 63,
a lot of them are adults.
63% of them have never been married. 23% of them are divorced. 13% are widowed. Most live alone, and guess what? 53% of them are women. Wow. And I'll bet half of them don't have any kind of much of an estate plan because they say, hey, it's just me. I'm all by myself. Who cares?
Could be. Zach has an estate plan, my son, only because I did it for him.
That's right. He would not have. Most 30, what is he, 30? 31?
He's 28.
28, okay. You know what? Very few 28-year-old kids, especially guys, have an estate plan.
True, true. That yes. That is very true. But whenever he had his surgery, he broke his thumb. And I told this story before. He broke his thumb sliding into base, playing baseball. Yeah. So he had to go in. He had to go in and have surgery. Uh-huh. And when he came out, he says to me, he goes, they asked me if I had a will. And I'm like,
a living will.
I know. He goes, a will. And I went, he goes, I have a will, right? I'm like, yeah, you do. But that's not what they were asking for. I'm like, perhaps did they ask if you had a healthcare proxy living will? And he went, Yeah, that was it. So, but we got it taken care of. He's all better now. But it was just funny because he looks at me, and of course he was still on drugs, and he's like, they asked me if I had a will.
That's not encouraging when you're going into surgery. Is it? You have a will? Oh, you might want to stop by at our business office and fill one out on the way to the OR.
Okay. Yeah, no, so.
All right. Listen, 518-476-5900. We'd love to hear from you this morning if you have a question on your mind. Today is, what do they call this today, Ben? Super Saturday?
Super Saturday.
Supposedly, more shopping goes on today, the last Saturday before Christmas, than the day after Thanksgiving, which used to be called Black Friday. I don't know.
They still call it Black Friday.
I find that hard to believe. Because I would think that most people were traveling. I noticed the roads weren't as busy yesterday, like driving into work. Seems like people took like Friday off and they're going into the next week.
I thought the road was pretty busy this morning.
Yeah, it's
a little busier than normal.
It's hard because it's Wednesday's it's kind of a hard day to...
Middle of the week, it's, Christmas.
It's an unusual day for Christmas to be fallen because it's like right in the middle of the week. So you don't get a long weekend.
Next year it'll be Friday because it's a leap year.
A leap year.
Oh, right. Cool. Well... Listen, there's been a lot going on in Washington this week. The government passed this spending, the so-called spending bill that keeps the government operating for the next year, I guess, or something like that, and which is a good thing. But part of this spending bill included a rider that adopted and now is... making it a law, this so-called the Secure Act. I talked about this a few months ago when it had passed the House of Representatives. And it's making major changes in the distribution scheme for IRAs and 401k plans for all of us who have those plans, which is like almost everybody. And it's hilarious what they call this thing. The Secure Act, do you know what it stands for? Setting every community up for retirement enhancement.
Nice.
What I think it should be called is setting every annuity salesman up for huge profits. Because that's really what it's doing. I'm sorry. But here's the deal. Okay? They're pushing this. The insurance industry is pushing this as this big consumer, wonderful consumer bill. Which I'm not so sure it is. They're going to let you keep your IRA now. You don't have to start taking mandatory distributions until you're 72 instead of 70 and a half. This starts next year, I believe. Yeah, so you're going to be able to accumulate tax-deferred for another 18 months. Whoopie-doo.
Right, right. Whoopie-doo.
Guess what's going away? No more stretch IRAs, okay? Used to be when you inherited an IRA from a parent, you could take the money out over your life expectancy. So if you were only, 58 when your parent died, you probably have a life expectancy of 25 years at age 58. Well, guess what? Now you're going to have to take it all out in 10 years, no matter how old you are. Boom. The end of stretch IRAs. That's not consumer friendly.
No, that's definitely not.
The government wants to force at people. Now, spouses can still do stretch IRAs, but nobody other than a spouse.
Well, with the spouse, it's not really a stretch, is it?
Well, you roll it over and use your life expectancy, which if you're the same age as your spouse, is basically the same distribution
scheme. Right, so you're not really gaining.
So the government wants to force people to cash in these IRAs in a 10-year period.
They want their taxes.
They want to pay the taxes, and they are also then they want you to pay the taxes. This is also, I believe, going to apply to Roth IRAs, which are non-taxable. Okay, so if you inherit a Roth IRA, you could also still use your age and life expectancy, even though when you take the money out, it's not taxed by the government. But guess what? They want to force the non-taxable assets to be distributed to the kids, so that kids will have to take that money out of the Roth, reinvest it in taxable assets, and pay the government more taxes. That's the theory behind it. Okay.
That stinks. And so how do the annuity people make money on this?
Well, very few pension plans and 401k plans offer annuity products as part of their investment portfolio. We don't in our law firm.
Mm-mm.
I don't know anybody who does. There's something like less than 10% of all retirement plans offer an annuity product, largely because employers like us are concerned that they're complicated. They are often oversold in terms of the projected earnings that are paid out of these plans, and some of the companies are not financially sound. Okay. Many of them are, but some of them aren't. So, employers don't offer them as a general rule because they're concerned about liability. If we offer an annuity product and the company either fails or the annuity turns out to be less than was advertised in terms of the returns that were promised, our employees could theoretically sue us for a breach of our fiduciary duty for offering an imprudent investment. So, you know what this bill does?
So we can do whatever we want to do now.
Right. It brings annuities into what's called a safe harbor. Safe harbor means there are no storms, just calm. So if the annuity company fails or it doesn't deliver as promised, guess what? You and I are insulated from being sued by our employees for offering the product.
Well, that works. I still
it works for us. It doesn't necessarily work for the employees.
But... The stretch IRA was something that was an excellent thing to be able to do, especially if you're a really young person and you inherited an IRA, then you could stretch it over your life expectancy.
Well, yeah, because we have a number of clients in our firm who have, for instance, allocated a chunk of their IRA to their grandchildren.
Right.
Who are maybe in their teens or 20s or 30s and have a very, very long life expectancy. And so all that's going away now. If a 25-year-old kid inherits an IRA, they're going to have to cash it out by the time they're 35.
Yeah, perhaps look at the IRA trust, too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
See what that needs to be done. So if you want to give us a call, we'd love to, Harry and I don't get much time to talk, but we'd love to hear your call. 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900, or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590. We do have seminars in January. They're not up on the website yet, but we have them coming January 21st and 2 in the afternoon, and that's at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park. The 22nd at 2 p.m. at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany. January 23rd at 10 a.m. at the Courtyard by Marriott Residence Inn on Wolf Road. And last but not least, January 23rd at 2 p.m. at the Courtyard by Marriott on Mohawk Harbor. That's over Harborside Drive in Schenectady over by the casino.
Oh.
Guess who's doing that one?
let me see. I know it's not me.
Yeah, so...
It's Casino Debbie.
So you know where I'll be after the seminar's over. So these are on basic estate planning. So we're going to be going over wills and trusts and some Medicaid, but this is just, again, basic estate planning. So,
okay.
You know, it's good to go to if you've got questions, if you're young or you're old, it really doesn't matter. They're great seminars to go to. We have free cookies and coffee, so you could come in and listen to us talk about estate planning. Hang around later if you have some specific questions, unless you go to the one by the casino, because I'll be out of there, you know.
You'll be. Just follow Debbie, and you'll be right by all the slots, I think. Aren't you? You play slots, right?
I
you
do, don't
play,
but I
like,
actually...
Do you play craps or blackjack or anything?
I don't know
like
how
that?
To play craps.
I don't either.
Blackjack.
It's very complicated to me.
Blackjack. I don't like other people at the table to yell at me, you know? You shouldn't have hit on that, so yeah.
Oh, yeah, because you got their card.
Yeah, no,
the
no.
Real, the real diehards, they really, yeah.
Yeah, so and that, so actually.
No sense of humor.
No,
at the,
no.
At the gambling table.
No, I went to Turning Stone this weekend because we went to a concert, and I actually started out with $50 on the roulette table. 2 hours mm-hmm. later, I still had $50, and I'm like, I'm done. I'm out. So. I broke
even. I mean, it's just.
It's random.
It's completely random.
And no one can yell at you, right? Because they got their own numbers, man. Right? So they can bet on whatever they want.
Right. Uh-huh.
So.
Amazing.
And it takes a little while to lose your money, too, if you're hitting some of the numbers.
It hardly ever takes me very long to lose my money. I don't think I've been to a casino in 20 years. I don't, you know, but it never's taken me very long to lose whatever.
Yeah.
My wife gives me an allowance. Okay, so she gives me like maybe $50 or $100. Mm-hmm. When that's gone, I have to leave.
You have to leave.
I have to leave.
Well, you know, what you need
but
is someone
good to have somebody like that with you.
Right, to come along and take the chips, right? Are you winning? Give me those.
Right.
So give us a call, 518-476-5900. 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590, which is toll free.
You know, the holidays, I mean, this week is holidays. I think Monday is the first night of Hanukkah, but Wednesday is Christmas, and I don't know when Kwanzaa is this year. But
it's the same. It's
same,
right
about the same time, probably. And but whatever the holiday is that you choose to celebrate, a lot of families are getting together. There's a lot of traveling. You heard Ben on the news talking about all these people are going to be driving all over the place.
The 26th is Kwanzaa.
26th, day after Christmas, Thursday. So... It's a good time to check up on older people, you know, like grandma or grandpa or Uncle Henry, if they're living alone, and, you know, make sure that everything's okay. Sometimes older people, you know, they're fiercely independent, but they get to a point where they really need some assistance and some help with things, even though they will swear up and down that they don't need any help. You all have a relative out there like that, I'm sure. I know I do. And also they tend to be forgetful, even if they don't have dementia or Alzheimer's. You know, so you check around and see if, you know, look at the refrigerator, make sure there's, like, food in there.
Mm-hmm. Not spoiled food.
Not spoiled food. You know, check the expiration date on a hamburger, for instance, or the... cheese or the salad dressing. Make sure there aren't like piled up
bills
that haven't been paid, like from October or November. Those are telltale signs that somebody's having a problem keeping up with their bills and things like that. Particularly people who have who take medications. Sometimes they get forgetful about what the dosage is, how many pills they're supposed to take, and what time of the day they're supposed to take it. So, as holidays progress, we just want to check on people and make sure they're okay. We do. I don't know how many home care Medicaid applications we've done in our office this year, but I know it's dozens and dozens and dozens of them. There are helpful services. There are home care services that our firm can help you put in place for a relative like this who maybe they only need a couple hours a day of help. And we can help you get those services in place, you know, like next year, for your mom or your grandma or your aunt, your uncle or something like that. So keep that in mind.
Well, no one wants to go into a nursing home.
Well, no. The whole point of needing care is that we can get you care at home. And New York, still currently, New York has some of the most comprehensive home care programs of any state in the country. We don't just have one home care program. You know, a lot of states only have one program because that's all the federal government mandates. New York has a half a dozen or more different kinds of home care programs. And then there are waivered services programs through social services. And part of the problem with folks is they don't know which program is the best for their relative. And it's going to depend on their condition, how much care they need, and all sorts like that. So, you know, if you've all listened to the radio regularly, or even if you're a new listener, you know, we have a certified care manager on our staff, you know, Kim Hance. And Kim is a person who can go out and meet with families and help the families evaluate the care needs of their relative. And you know, maybe they'll need some light housekeeping services. Maybe they need some laundry, some shopping, you know, assistance with bathing and stuff like that. So we can help you put those services. Maybe they need more complicated services. Maybe they need medical intervention of some type. People who have diabetes, macular degeneration, things like that, who need injections, for instance. You need a different kind of a personal care service. So, you know, as the holidays approach, well, they're not just approaching, they're here. A lovely red sweater you have on there. It's a very Christmassy.
It's not Christmassy.
It isn't? It's red and green.
It sure looks Christmassy.
Well, I don't know. What would you call it?
I don't know. It's just a sweater.
It's not that you'd wear at Halloween.
I might. You never know.
Okay, then. Okay. Okay, so what else you want to talk about? Let's see. Well, I have... The Affordable Care Act. No? No?
You just like to go through depressing things right now.
Oh,
right?
I know.
It's the holiday season. You should be, you know, talking about great things like going home and seeing families and getting together, talking about your...
We're having a bunch of people. We're having about 12 people over for dinner on Wednesday, Christmas dinner. And, I don't know, what are you cooking? No,
I'm going to Missouri.
You're going to see your mother, mm-hmm. Which is a very nice thing to do.
Yeah, so Zach and I, my son.
So who cooks dinner or do you go out?
Well, what usually happens is on Christmas Eve, I go shopping. Anyway.
Now the casinos must be open on Christmas Eve. Are they closed Christmas Day or no?
Oh, no. No, they're open. But those are in Oklahoma. That's an hour drive. That's not till the day after Christmas.
Where the wind comes sweeping
down the plane.
The plane.
Yeah. So no, my mom cooks, but she doesn't want anybody around, you know, so she cooks Christmas Eve. Uh-huh. Then we have our Christmas Eve dinner, open our presents. And then usually, on Christmas Day, my sister and her husband last year, they cooked like Christmas Day dinner. They did fish and all that kind of stuff, as opposed to the ham and turkey that we did the night before. But yeah, Christmas Eve, I go shopping. Okay. I usually take Zach and my sister's daughter to the mall so that they can buy it.
Christmas Eve?
Yeah, Christmas Eve.
Well, the stores usually close early Christmas Eve.
Like 5.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
We go during the day, go out and have lunch.
It's all men wandering around aimlessly, isn't it, on Christmas Eve? Desperately trying to find a present for their wives.
Exactly. Well, it's not busy, right? It's actually probably the least busy shopping day.
It's true.
So, yeah. And now Christmas Day, you know, you can hang out, watch all the DVDs that my nephew got for Christmas. That's
Hallmark movies?
Continuously
running Christmas Story? No. It's 24 hours a day on some channel, doesn't it?
True.
Red Rider.
I think TNT or TBS.
You shoot your eye out. Be careful you shoot your eye out.
It's the worst Christmas movie ever.
I don't know why it's so...
Terrible.
I got to tell you. I really thought that was... Yeah. That and Home Alone. I never got that.
Oh, I love Home Alone.
Oh, I love... Yeah. Really? I'm a Home Alone. I like that.
Christmas Vacation with Chevy Chase is like the standalone. Nah. Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever even seen that.
Well, you're not a big Chevy Chase fan.
Well, I like the old,
A Wonderful Life?
The Alistair Sim version of Christmas Carol.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite one from, like, 1953.
It's like from the 50s. Yep. Yeah. Alistair Sim is the best version of the Christmas Carol.
It's funny. I just watched one.
Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yep. A couple of days ago with Reginald Owen.
There's a really dark one. There's a really dark one out on FX or something. That's
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, it's really, like, weird. Like, it's almost like a ghost. Well, it is a ghost story, of course.
You think? Well, there was the one Bill Murray that was Scrooge. You remember that one?
Yeah.
That one was a funny
story. One of my favorite Christmas movies is Bad Santa with Billy Bob Thornton. Did you ever see that?
Yes, I did. Well, you know, those were all questions when we had our Christmas party. We had Christmas trivia.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was fun.
We did Christmas trivia.
Debbie always has a like a little bit of entertainment and stuff. We were having our Christmas lunch and everything. It was nice. Yeah, definitely. And we have finally, thank you, Janet, our first caller. Hey, Janet and Albany.
Morning,
good
Janet.
Morning.
Good morning. A question about the concept of step up in value when you inherit a piece of property from someone.
Yes.
I understand that when you sell it, your capital gains tax is calculated based on the original purchase price versus what you sold it for. And I understand there's a concept in there called step up in value, and I wondered if you could explain that to me, please.
Yeah, sure. anyone who purchases what are called investment assets or capital assets, like a share of stock or a bond or a piece of real estate, when you sell it, the difference between, presumably it's gone up, you know, sometimes they go down. But let's say if you bought a share of stock for $10 and when you sold it, it was worth $20, the $10 of appreciation is taxed at capital gains rates, either short-term or long-term. So if you held the asset for more than a year, gets taxed at long-term capital gains rates, which are very favorable, okay? The maximum capital gains rate is 20%, and I don't think you hit that till you're in about $400,000 of taxable income. So, but you do have to pay tax on it. Now, when a person dies and owns stocks and bonds or real estate, the IRS, the tax laws, give that person what's called a step-up in basis. Basis is your taxable value for calculating capital gains. So, again, back to your $10 stock, if you die and you haven't sold the stock while you're alive, and you own the stock at death and it's worth $20, well, guess what? The people who inherit your estate inherit your stock at the $20 price without regard to what you paid for it, okay? So, they will never pay a tax on that appreciation. That's called unrealized gain because you didn't sell it. So, and the same thing happens with real estate. You know, if you bought a house for $100,000 30 years ago, and now it's worth $300,000, well, if you sold it, you wouldn't pay any capital gains taxes if it's your principal residence, because the capital gain would have to be more than $250,000 if you're single and $500,000 if you're married. However, when you die, your $100,000 cost basis house is still worth $300,000, and now you leave it to your son and daughter. Well, they have a cost basis now of $300,000. And so if they sell it for $300,000, there's no capital gain. If they sell it for $320,000, the capital gain is only $20,000, not $220,000. So, and they couldn't exclude the principal residence because it's not their house. They don't live there. So it's sort of a consolation prize that the IRS gives people who die or their relatives. There was some talk years ago of getting rid of that, but it's still the law. And one of the reasons it's there is it's really not to give people favorable tax treatment. It's just that over time, it becomes almost impossible to go back and calculate your original cost basis for stocks and bonds, particularly if you have dividend reinvestment, because every time you'd reinvest a dividend, you're purchasing stock at a different price, and it's virtually impossible to keep track of it after a while. So...
Okay, so that would apply to anything that's inherited that would otherwise have a capital gains
right.
tax.
But mostly it's stocks and bonds. I mean, obviously cash.
I'm thinking more of property,
bank account
actually,
doesn't appreciate.
So any piece of property applies, whether it's residence or just land or a second home, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
A piece of real estate.
It doesn't matter who you inherit it from.
Doesn't matter.
that would still remain the same. That calculation would still be the same.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Just to give you an example, many years ago, when my mother was alive, when my father died in 1978, he was very young and died of cancer. About a year after my father died, my mother bought $10,000 worth of ExxonMobil stock in 1979. Well, she lived until 2011, all right? She lived another, 30 years or more, 40 years. When she died, she still had that stock, but guess what? It was worth $125,000 30 years later. When my sisters and I inherited the stock, our cost basis was $125,000, not the $10,000 that my mother had purchased it for. Had she sold it while she was alive, she would have had to pay capital gains tax on the appreciation, but not her heirs and beneficiaries on her death.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, well, that's terrific. Good news. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Bye.
We'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131 or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I'm Harry Miller.
I'm Debbie Verney.
And Debbie and I are attorneys with the Herzog Law Firm. And we're here chatting with you each Saturday morning from 8 to 9 o'clock. And so, during the second half hour, we'd love to get some more calls in here. A little quiet this morning.
It is.
People are out shopping.
They're out shopping.
Well, they may be getting... We got a lot of stuff to do. You know, I got to go get stuff for dinner and things. I got to go to the wine store and get some wine. I have to, make sure I got to... We got desserts we got to get and things. We got to... Stuff for... I don't know what Diana's making a... Tenderloin. We're making a whole tenderloin, and then she's going to poach a salmon, a whole salmon. Well, not a whole salmon.
That's really a big salmon.
A fillet. It's not a whole salmon. We're not having 100 people. So that'll be nice, and all those other things. But now the caller, just before we went into the break, before the half hour, a very good point about... step up in basis on stock prices and bonds. I mean, bonds don't appreciate the same way that stocks do because they're a function of interest rates as opposed to the stock market so much. And but it's important. The thing that's important that a lot of people don't do is people, if they inherit stocks and they don't sell them right away. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you inherit, let's say, $100,000 or $200,000 worth of stocks from your mom or dad. For heaven's sakes, you got to keep a record of what those things were trading at on the day your parents died.
Exactly.
Okay, because if you sell them 10 years later, say, oh my gosh, what's my cost basis? Well, you got to go back and see what the price was on the day of death. Bruce in Saratoga Springs is on the line. Hey, Bruce.
Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm wondering what you guys thought about prepaid funerals. That's something that's a good idea or not. If the money is sitting in a interest-bearing account that would be used for this purpose and stuffed away in that manner versus prepaying a funeral.
In a manner of speaking,
I think it's a great idea because it's something that your family doesn't have to deal with. That's not a good time for your family to be making decisions like that, so... A lot of people will prepay their funeral. What you need to do, though, is make sure that it's revocable. Unless you have a person that's going into a nursing home, then it has to be irrevocable because you want to be able to change it. If you decide to move someplace else and you need to get the money back to arrange a funeral someplace else, or you decide you want to be buried someplace else, it's always a good idea to make it a revocable burial arrangement. And again, making decisions now. Some people will pre-plan and not pay just so that the family doesn't have to.
But, of course, the biggest advantage of doing a prepaid funeral is you lock in the price.
Well, sometimes. It depends.
Well, most of them, you lock in the funeral home costs. You don't lock in the cost of, if you don't have a gravesite or the cost of excavating the gravesite. The other thing, frankly, I find with many of my clients is if you go and pick out your own funeral arrangements, probably you're going to spend less money on your funeral than your spouse or your kids are going to spend in the throes of grieving for someone's death, even if they've been sick a long time, or worst case, in a case of someone suddenly dying. I mean, the shock of it is such that, you're like kind of numb in a sense for a while. And to have to go then and you're not thinking about money, it's a more rational thing to do. It really is. The other thing is some people have very specific ideas about what they want done.
Yes.
Okay. Some people could care less. You know, I have people who can say, I don't care. You know, just cremate me and, you know, put me on, you know, whatever. Other people, very specific. They want to pick out their dressing gown, their suit. They want to be buried in their, you know, with their golf clubs or I want their ashes scattered in Yankee Stadium, which you can't do anymore.
Correct.
legally.
The irrevocable part comes down to if, you know, this money would be invested, I guess, lack for a better word, with an insurance company.
Well, no, they put it in the funeral home usually puts it in a bank, like in a CD in a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get an interest statement every year, just like you do on your own bank accounts, and you got to pay tax on the interest earnings. But I think most funeral accounts pay a higher rate of interest than the normal CD. I think they pay close to 2%. Don't quote me on that, but I think it's a little higher than you would get if you just... In my experience, I see a lot of funeral bills in the estates we administer, and a traditional burial in a cemetery, in a casket, I would say is going to cost somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000. Does that sound about right, Debbie?
It's about right, yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to be cremated, that's going to be about a third of that, maybe even less. It depends how.
Well, you're right on with the estimate.
Yeah.
The estimate we got was $13,000. Mm-hmm. And this is not for me personally. It's for my 88-year-old mother.
Right.
So, you know, and she's got the cash sitting in a bank account. And I'm wondering, well, if the money's sitting there all dedicated, you know, and it's earning interest, why prepay? And I worry about the health of the funeral home, and they say they're going to put it in an irrevocable trust that's going to be held by an insurance company.
That's interesting, because I know when we prepaid the funeral, it was an M&T bank. I know we used to get a statement every year from M&T Bank. That's where the money was held, and it was an interest-bearing account.
They have to put it in a separate escrow account. That's required under the law. Although, I mean, you're right. I remember about 20 years ago, there was a funeral home locally here that went bankrupt, and the funeral home had actually stolen money from the escrow. It doesn't belong to the funeral home, so they can't put the money in their general operating account to pay their bills. Just like we have client escrow accounts in our law firm, but they're segregated from our operating account. I mean, that's not our money. It's a client's money. You know, like if we get a $10,000 deposit on a real estate contract and there's no broker, we're holding the deposit, we have special escrow accounts. And, you know, I mean, you don't mess with those because, you know, it's
not your money.
It's, first of all, it's criminal. And secondly, you lose your license to practice law. So you have to be very careful with these things if you are. And for the most part, that is true of funeral homes. They keep them separate. And if they file for bankruptcy, their creditors can't take the money in those prepaid funeral accounts. So it's safe in that sense. But the other thing you want to make sure is if you move to Florida and you're not coming back here, that you can move the account to a funeral home down in Florida. All right? So if you're looking at that, now if your aunt is 88 years old, probably she's not going to be moving to Florida. But you know, you want to make sure it's portable, as Debbie said.
Okay, and that's the revocable one.
Yeah, the revocable. The irrevocable is the only if a person is going to go on Medicaid to pay for a nursing home, for instance. And that what irrevocable means is if you paid $13,000 to the funeral director and the funeral only costs $11,000 when you actually go and have it, the other $2,000 doesn't go back to your aunt. It goes to the county social services department, okay, because the person's on Medicaid and Medicaid is paying for their nursing home, okay? So years ago, 20, 30 years ago, when people went into a nursing home and applied for Medicaid, they give the funeral home $10,000, and then the funeral only costs $5,000, and the nurse and the funeral home would then, you know, kick back the extra $5,000 to the family after the person died. So you can't do that anymore. So that's what the irrevocable part of it means. But it's only people who are going to be receiving Medicaid in for chronic care in a nursing home. Otherwise, it does not have to be irrevocable.
A lot of moving parts here.
Definitely.
There are. Okay. There are. It's a, you know, I don't know. I mean, I have a funeral. The other thing that everybody ought to know here is this is a form we use a lot more recently. The state health department has a form available, and frankly, you could go download it online, and it's called a disposition of remains form, a DORF. Okay.
DORA.
A DORA, yeah. Like Dora the Explorer.
Like Dora the Explorer.
And what it allows you to do is put someone in charge of your funeral arrangements, okay? And it also allows you to say what you want to happen, okay? So I actually did one recently for someone, and this person wanted to be cremated and buried with her husband, all right? And I said, okay, well, what happens if you die first and he's still alive? And she said, not that husband, my other husband.
Oh.
I said, oh, where is he? He said, he's on the buffet in the dining room. I said, oh, okay. No, she had he was cremated, and so she wanted to be married. She wanted to be married with her previous husband, and her current husband wanted to be buried with his previous wife. And they were all copacetic about that. So we wanted to memorialize that so their children knew. Sometimes people discuss these things with their spouses, but their children don't have the faintest idea what their funeral plans are. So sometimes it's a good idea to put it down in writing. All right? Even particularly if you have, as this person did, multiple husbands or multiple wives. Because sometimes the current spouse has a different idea about where to bury dad than dad's children from his previous marriage do.
Correct.
And frankly, dad ought to decide where he wants to be, not either his wife or his children, I suppose. So it's a good way to retain control of these things from a standpoint that has nothing to do with cost. It's just a matter of where you want to be.
Okay, well, you gave me a lot of food for thought here to chew around in my head.
I have, actually, if you call money, I have this really cute little pamphlet I got of all the different ways you can be buried in New York, you know? I mean, we can now bury people in a pet cemetery.
Ew.
Well, you'd be
and
surprised.
And not after I saw the movie, no.
You'd be surprised. I mean, there are a lot of animal people out there, petterized people, who frankly like their cats more than most of their relatives. So there's something for everyone in the funeral arrangement business, I find. We try to keep things light here as much as we can. These are sort of depressing topics we talk about, burying, you know.
But necessary.
It is definitely necessary.
It is. I mean, I had this problem in my own family. When my dad died, am I talking too much?
Well, we have like four callers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, well, okay, we got callers waiting. Ben didn't hold the thing up, so I just thought we were, you know, just chewing a fan.
I must raise a subject, huh?
That's it. You must have it lit up,
okay.
Boy.
Okay.
Okay. So long.
Thanks for listening. Larry and DeLanson, what do you got? Are you tongue-tied this morning?
And hi, Debbie. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
How are you, Larry?
Very good. I know you guys do real estate closings for clients, and did you handle one for us, and it was very efficient and expeditious, and I thought reasonable in cost.
Thank you.
Question is, would you consider yourself like a real estate attorney and, for example, guiding someone through the process of possibly buying foreclosed property, or is that something specialized?
Well, actually, it's funny that you asked that. We have a new real estate attorney that's coming on board January 1st.
Oh, fantastic.
That's strictly going to be doing real estate.
And he also does title work.
He does title work.
So he can write the title insurance policies and... That's basically he's like a full-time real estate person. Yeah.
Yeah. So
Well,
he would be someone to contact to do that.
His name's Dan Glazer. Mm-hmm. He's a great guy, he's going to be. I mean, we all do real estate, but you're talking about foreclosed property or underwater property.
You might remember I have a situation where there's a home that I get, my wife and I are entitled to some of the money in the trust, but the trustee and the executor have not done anything for 2 years, and the house is going up for foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And my thought was maybe I should protect myself, see if I can't buy it at foreclosure.
You can go to the foreclosure sale and bid it in, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the difficulty is you have to have the cash. I haven't done a foreclosure in a while, but it used to be, they auctioned off property on the courthouse steps or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you got to put up a 10% deposit and then close within 30 or 60 days. So it doesn't give you a whole lot of time to get a mortgage in place. But if you have the available liquid resources, you could buy it and then refinance it later or renovate it or something. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, we can help you with that stuff. Sure.
Okay, great, Gary. I've been meaning to call you at the office, and I figured, well, this is a quicker way. I know you're both there. You're captive, so fire away.
See, we're
captive
right here.
Audience.
You don't get my voicemail when you call us on the radio. Okay. Hey, have a great Christmas,
Merry Mayor. Christmas to both.
Merry Christmas.
Hi to your wife. Bye-bye.
And to Ben also.
Thank you.
Steven Redhook is on the line. Steve, good morning. Haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I had two questions for my ask. Going back to that step-up procedure,
yes.
What if you bought stock for $200 and then when someone's deceased, that stock goes down to $100? Can you...
Yeah.
Take
it's called a capital
price.
Loss.
Yeah, you can take the loss.
Well, yeah. Well, you can offset capital losses against capital gains, all right? But if you don't have capital gains, your capital loss limitation, I believe, is $3,000 a year,
mm-hmm.
Okay, which ain't much.
Well, you can carry it over, can't you?
You can carry it forward, I think. You can carry it back 3 years and forward 15 years, the last I looked. Yeah, let me tell you, in the 2008-2009 stock market crash, my mother owned $400,000 worth of stock in Wachovia Bank.
Mm.
And that was the third largest bank in the country, and it went bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
And in exchange for that, she got $30,000 worth of new Wells Fargo stock. So she had a $370,000.
Yeah.
Capital loss. Believe me, she didn't live long enough to offset it all, believe me.
Wow.
It wasn't funny at the time. I can laugh about it now, but,
Yeah.
People who get overloaded in one kind of stock. She had a lot of bank stocks. I mean, fortunately, she had some other bank stocks that went up, but, that was a biggie.
Yeah.
You can deduct the losses, but they're very, very limited. It's $3,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if you had a $30,000 loss. Now, if you lost $30,000 on a stock, went down, and you had $50,000 of capital gain, you could offset the $50 with the $30 loss, so you'd only have to pay tax on the $20 of capital gain. Your accountant can, you probably have somebody who does your taxes, or do you do them yourself?
I do myself. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, well, that's okay. If you have sometimes it gets complicated, depending on how many trades you do.
The second question is, at this point, we have an irrevocable trust.
Mm-hmm.
Can I change that to a bloodline irrevocable trust?
I know what you mean by a bloodline, like a dynasty trust?
Whoever inherits that trust has to be blood-related.
Well, sure. I mean, I'd have to read the trust. It depends.
That's how we do our trusts anyways.
Our trusts can be amended, all right? It depends if we did it or if another law firm did it. Sometimes you can amend the trust and change the beneficiaries going down, and sometimes you can't change the beneficiaries.
Well, I don't mean to get real personally think, but in a situation where you have some stepchildren that you don't hear from in 5-6 years.
Right. They're not going to take anyway. Stepkids wouldn't take.
But he's saying they're in the trust now, I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And he wants to get them out.
We can do that.
Probably we can do that, you know.
Okay, I just wonder if it's possible.
Now, did we do your trust?
No.
So we'd have to see who... We'd have to read the trust in order to give you a definitive answer.
Right.
Normally, if there's not a provision in the trust that permits it to be amended to change the beneficiaries who take after you pass away, mm-hmm. you can only amend the trust with the consent of all the current beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Okay? And that's going to be hard to get the consent of somebody who you're going to basically disinherit and take out of the trust.
Maybe you don't tell them.
Well, how are you going to get their signature?
No, my point is, can there be verbiage put in there saying this
yes.
Trust or everything only addresses people with the bloodline of John Smith or whatever?
I can't give you a definite answer without reading your trust.
Right. Okay, all
that's
right.
All. I just can't. I don't know. Maybe. The answer is maybe.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Call me next
good.
Week, all right?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, Steve. Have a good holiday.
You know, if he could call the office on Monday at 518-465-7581, ask for Harry, and Harry could talk to you, and probably you could scan and email your trust over or fax it over to the office, and we could take a look at it, because depending on what the language in the trust says, if it was one of our trusts, it says that you can change the beneficiaries and change the trustees anytime you want to.
It does. I had a trust recently from a client down in Kingston, our Kingston office. We did not prepare. Had been prepared, I don't know, 15 years ago by a different law firm. And it didn't have in it a power to amend the trust per se, but it reserved to the person who set up the trust what's called a limited power of appointment. So they had a limited power of appointment to change the beneficiaries. That's a technical legal, what we used to call a distinction without a difference. But it permits you to amend the trust. Just you have to do it in a different way. You have to exercise the power of appointment instead of doing it. So the same result was achieved by a slightly different method.
A lot of times you have to do it by will. There's a trust that were done between
1990 and 2003. This particular one didn't require a will. It just required... We did an instrument exercising a power of appointment. You know, that's it.
It's exciting stuff.
It is exciting stuff. I mean, you know, estate planning's, you know, really exciting these days. I don't know.
Well, estate planning's fun, but estate administration, I think estate administration's fun. It's kind of like forensic accounting. You know, when the people come in and they're like, well, what did mom and dad have? And I'm like, I don't know. What'd they have?
They don't know.
I can tell you 20 years ago what they had when they filled out the questionnaire, but I don't know what they have. And then we kind of look at the tax return, and we say, okay, they had stock, and they had bonds, and they had accounts. And they're like, oh. So, I mean, that's always a place to start. And this time of year, if someone passes away, is an excellent time to be able to figure that out, because all the 1099s come in January.
Great time to die, right?
That's right. It's a great time to die.
All your 1099s come in January, so we'll at least know what your income was. But there's true. Assets that produce income that maybe you don't get a 1099 for, like U.S. savings bonds or, some types of insurance products or, you know, annuities that you're not taking current distributions from. And
savings bonds. You know, that's an excellent thing that you bring up, because when you were talking about step-up in basis, savings bonds, there's no step up because you haven't paid tax on all that income. So,
well, it's not capital gain. It's interest.
Right. So a lot of people think that they're just going to get those free and clear, right? All that deferred interest, and you end up, I always tell people annuities and savings bonds, you're going to, when you inherit those, generally you're going to have to pay tax on them.
A lot of tax.
Yeah.
If you have, I don't know what a $100 savings bond at maturity, which should be about 30 years for most bonds, be worth what, $700-$800?
It just depends.
It's a lot. So, and it's all taxable ordinary income, not long-term capital gain. So we got to remember, you bought that $100 bond for $50 from Uncle Sam. And at maturity now, let's say it's worth $700, which is about probably pretty close. $650 of that is taxed as ordinary interest.
Mm-hmm.
And the other $50 is the return of your original investment, which is what you paid to buy the bond. That's not taxable. Okay? It's like an annuity. You buy a $100,000 annuity, and 15 years later, it's worth $150,000. Well, guess what? When you cash it in, you pay ordinary income, not long-term capital gain on appreciation in an annuity. That's gets taxed at a higher rate for most people.
Yeah, so you have to look at those things whenever whenever you get an inheritance. It's, you know, there's no inheritance tax in New York, and there's no estate tax unless you have over $5.6 million. But there's going to be tax on those. So you have to really look at that when you start cashing them in.
Well, and that, well, yeah, you do. It's very important because these, you know, this is why when you're looking at nursing home planning and having to liquidate, transfer, or spend down assets, you better use a law firm as opposed to some paralegal, former paralegal assistant who used to work for a law firm and hangs out a shingle and doesn't know anything about the tax consequences of doing these things. Or you could inadvertently generate a huge amount of unnecessary and unexpected taxes for yourself by liquidating, you know,
the wrong thing,
the wrong asset. You might want to liquidate an asset that produces capital gain rather than ordinary income, or vice versa, depending on whether you have offsetting deductions and things like that for medical expenses. So that's why you need people who actually understand this stuff and can give you some competent advice.
Definitely.
Well, we're almost out of time, so
we are.
I wish everybody a really, really happy Christmas, a wonderful New Year, and
Merry Christmas.
Talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.